Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Clone Wars Report. Very, very exciting music. That was like a great actual action music, and there's something about it that made me feel like it was like an ad for like a Western steak restaurant at the same time.
I just came from a faux Western barbecue restaurant, so maybe that is in my soul and gut.
The food in your gut sang to us today. That's beautiful. We are very happy to be here. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and the person who makes the beautiful music at the top of every episode of the Clone Wars Report is Ken Nabsok. We are going through the entire Clone Wars animated series and discussing each arc or episode, as the case may be. And Ken, for this episode of our podcast, we're right in the middle of season four, and we're in the dark period.
How you
feeling as we go into this? We're going to be talking today about the three-episode arc, the Zygerian Terror. How are you coping?
I mean, you know, remember those two episodes with 3PO and R2 on magical missions with frog elves and, you know, little brownies from Willows? Yeah, it's not that anymore.
Yeah, a little light dictator-crushing feels just like absolute candy and rainbows compared to this arc.
Yeah.
A very important, very good arc, but we wanted to acknowledge right away at the top an intense one, following up the intense arc of Pong Krell. The episodes in this arc that we are discussing this episode, Season 4, Episode 11, Kidnapped, written by Henry Gilroy, with the credit of additional writing by Stephen Melching. Yeah. That one is directed by Kyle Dunleavy. Then Season 4, Episode 12, Slaves of the Republic, written by Henry Gilroy. Again, Stephen Melching as well. Directed by Brian Kalin O'Connell. Season 4, Episode 13, Escape from Kadavo. Same writing team and directed by Danny Keller. So consistent writing team. Three different great familiar Clone Wars directors. And the writing stuff's really interesting, isn't it, Ken?
It absolutely is, and where this kind of came from with the comic series that, you know, I'm sure we'll address here. I really I don't know why I sometimes feel protective of the legacy of Henry Gilroy in Star Wars. I have been fortunate to meet him for about 10 minutes, both of us with a couple drinks in our systems at a party. That's all. I have no connection to him, Joseph. I just think he's such a good Star Wars writer and Star Wars mind. And this is nothing against Filoni, but as we talk about here, sometimes a man in the cowboy hat is front and center, and that's not all who makes the show. And he's so just important just in terms of the development of the early Star Wars, Clone Wars stuff. And so to see his name pop up here for these important episodes, again, I know based on a 2008 comic series, it's just, I was like, we're in good hands. We're in good hands for these episodes.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I have this feeling, like I don't even know how to describe the feeling. I will use the cliche of a warm glow when you're watching a show you already like, and then the writer or a director that you're like, yeah, comes on the screen. Yes. You know, for me in classic Doctor Who, that's Robert Holmes. When it's Robert Holmes written serial, I'm like, yeah, warm glow inside. And I feel that way about Henry Gilroy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say Conan O'Brien, Simpsons, Joseph Scrimshaw, and Tig Tone. These are the names. These are the names.
Well, that is very kind of you. Very kind. Stephen Melching, of course, also contributed massively to the Clone Wars. So that's also a warm glow name for me. Yeah. We could talk about warm glows all day, but should we get into this this very rough arc?
Considering it's hot in Burbank today, yes, move on. No warm glows anymore.
Excellent. Here is the summary. Once again, tried to keep it short. Once again, failed. Here we go. Peace disrupted. On the planet Kyros, a colony of art-loving Togrutas are forced to take a side in the ongoing war. Count Dooku hands over the Togruta people to the vile Jaegerians, who hope to rebuild the Empire of Slavery that brought them wealth before it was decimated long ago by the Jedi. Our Jedi heroes, Anakin Skywalker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, and Padawan Ahsoka Tano arrive on Kyros. As Nigerian commander Darth Stanar threatens to set off bombs around the colony, killing Togruta hostages unless the Jedi submit and fulfill his desire for revenge and control. Obi-Wan challenges Darth Stanar to ritual combat and endures a brutal beating. This buys Anakin and Ahsoka time to defuse the bombs. After the bombs are neutralized, the Jedi realize they've been set up. The Togruta are long gone. Anakin, driven by his own horrific experiences as a slave, is determined to stop the Zygerians. He and Ahsoka board Darth Stanar's escaping ship, defeat his pet Blixus, and force Stanar to reveal the Togruta colonists have already been taken back to the Zygerian Empire to be sold, and in defiance of the Jedi and Republic, restart the slave auctions of old. Using Dinar's captured Zygerian ship, Zygerian's really hard to say, especially when I've usually been saying Zygerian, but they say Zygerian throughout this episode, so I'm trying to change.
I do, yes.
Using Dinar's captured Zygerian ship, our heroes travel to Zygeria. Rex and Obi-Wan search for the captured Togruta while Anakin poses as a master and Ahsoka as a captured prize to be sold. Anakin and Ahsoka successfully make contact with Queen Miraj Sintel, and Anakin works hard to charm her. Meanwhile, Obi-Wan is captured. The queen seeks to prove Anakin's loyalty at the auction by commanding him to strike a chained Obi-Wan. Anakin resists, calling on R2-D2 to launch the Jedi's hidden lightsabers, all four of them, into their waiting hands. After a brief but valiant battle, Rex, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka are all captured. Seeking to prove she can control Anakin, the queen makes him an offer. Serve willingly by her side, like the selfless Jedi he claims to be, and she will let his friends go free. As Anakin wrestles with his destiny, Obi-Wan and Rex are imprisoned on the Zygerian's processing facility on Kadavo. Obi-Wan attempts to resist, but the Togruta colonists are punished in his place by Keeper Egress. Again, the Zygerians seek to prove they can break a Jedi's will using their empathy as a weakness. But troubles mount for Queen Miraj Sintel when her Prime Minister, Ate Molek, worries about her dangerous obsession with Anakin. Molek calls Dooku. Darth Sidious then tells his apprentice the Sith will need slaves and does not want the competition from the Zygerians. Dooku arrives and tells the queen he has no interest in breaking the Jedi's soul, just killing them. Anakin challenges the queen, telling her she is a servant of the Sith. The queen sends Anakin away and he frees Ahsoka, but by the time the Jedi return, Dooku has force-choked the queen. Anakin and Ahsoka escape with the queen, and with her dying breath, Queen Miraj tells Anakin about Kadavo and insists he was right. She too is a slave, and there's no escape. Anakin and Ahsoka arrive on Kadavo with Republic reinforcements. Obi-Wan and Rex stage a revolt. Keeper Agress retaliates by slowly opening the cage of the Togruta, threatening to send them falling to their doom. Ahsoka, determined to rescue her people, figures out a strategy to get the Togruta on board a Republic ship. Obi-Wan bests Keeper Agros, who mockingly says a Jedi won't kill an unarmed prisoner. Rex declares he's no Jedi and launches a staff into the Zygerian's chest and kills him. Safely on Republic ships, Anakin insists Ahsoka's the real hero of the day. The traumatized Togruta thank Ahsoka and declare they will join the Republic after all, which, as we all know, sadly, won't work out that great for them in the long run, probably. The end.
Beautiful. 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 Wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah, well, thank you. There's a lot in there, a lot in there, a lot of twists and turns, and a lot of very interesting ideas that I'm sure we're going to dive into here. But I want to just dive into your big picture reaction, Ken. You love this episode, like it, struggle with it. How does it compare to when you first watched it to now? All that great stuff.
Yeah. First of all, I consider this a very important arc, and we'll get some of the big reasons for that here. But this is one of the arcs. I'll say it this way. I definitely remembered this. I even sometimes will reference it. I didn't remember anything that happened in it. Just
really.
Yeah.
What did you think you remembered?
Great question. I think I remembered Obi-Wan going undercover as Rako Hardeen, which is clearly not this arc.
He was so successfully went undercover that he disappeared into a different Clone Wars arc in your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, really don't remember much of it other than, the Zygerian, or now correctly Zygerian slavers arc. Totally remember that. And again, I totally do. Jokes aside, I remember it. It'd been a long time. I didn't go back to it because, it's too dark. I don't want to deal with it or anything like that. No. I just, when you're it's a Saturday afternoon, I'm going to watch the Clone Wars. You're not going to go to this arc, I don't think. You're going to go to something else. So I think I just hadn't experienced it in a while.
Yeah. So what was your take then when you experienced it? Did you really like it? Did you like it with some reservations because of the really heavy subject matter?
No, I actually love it because I in the sense that it's, using slavery of any kind, no matter what world, fantasy world you're in or real world, it can be, you got to thread that needle. And we're more aware of that now than even then. And even my beloved Game of Thrones has done it well and done it bad. In the same, sometimes same episode. only because it's a pretty grim, realistic thing throughout history of mankind, unfortunately, right?
Yeah.
Beyond any specific example of it. So to use it, because it is part of the Star Wars story, clearly established, clearly in Return of the Jedi, we're dealing with it. I think by the time we get to Phantom Menace, it's a thing in Star Wars. And then the big question of, why didn't Qui-Gon do this and this and that? And I think even E.K. Johnston getting a chance to wrestle with it in the first Padme novel. I do love when it's dealt with in Star Wars, just on this, how does it affect this story in this world we love? But then to use it as this backdrop for some real deep stuff that I don't even know, I don't necessarily have all the answers to the deeper stuff in Clone Wars. Sometimes I even have more questions or it's great thought starter stuff. To use that as a backdrop for Anakin's path, the Jedi and their place in the relationship with the Republic, it's real deep and smart stuff with also, by the way, some good action, some fun quips, and a lot of violence.
Yes. Yes. There's definitely some good action. There's definitely some fun quips, fun if dark quips. I like what you're saying is I really love this arc. I'm a little haunted by it because it is it is still telling a fantasy story. Right. And you could, I think, is a non-parent, you could safely sit down and watch this with a kid and you could handle some questions. It's still an adventure serial on its surface, but also when it's really digging into the ideas, it doesn't flinch away from, we are highlighting that this horror of a society that believes that strength and power is everything. And they believe, because of that philosophy, they believe that they have a right to own and sell, other sentient beings. Like, it does not flinch away from it. It's not just like a kind of a detail in a fantasy world. It is the point of the arc, and that's what gives it, that's what makes me really love it, but also be haunted by it.
Yeah. Again, if you're deciding to tell this kind of story, it to me now more than ever, we have grown up as a society, and Clone Wars came about during a different era where we were starting to see some changes, but bigger changes, societal changes, I think have happened or have been asked to, have happened in the last couple of years here. So you look at things a little differently. I think if you're going to decide to do, hey, we're doing the story about slavery, I don't want it to be some sort of plot tool for you. I want it to have some meaning and some relevance to the bigger story and some painful lessons maybe even too. And I think these episodes succeed on all of those kind of bigger levels.
Yeah, absolutely for me. And I think part of what is so successful about it is it isn't just like, it's set in a different era, different time, and some Jedi go and they encounter a horrible world. Like that's fine. That story could happen. That did happen a little bit in Master and Apprentice. And I think that was handled really well, well there. But this arc is so much telling the story of the Clone Wars. So many big picture important things are being advanced. I think the biggest of which is, you know, it isn't random to me that this is the second horribly dark arc in a row, right? That we had the Pong Krell, where he has seen visions of the Jedi falling, and he wants to be on the winning side, and is, in my opinion, kind of lost in his mind, and is sending clones to their slaughter on purpose. And now we have this society, the Zygerian, who are like, hey, the galaxy is kind of falling apart, and maybe the Republic and the Jedi aren't going to be around. We're going back to our empire, right? So it is explicitly, to me, a story of all of the darkness. I talked in our last episode about, you know, Yoda saying the shroud of the dark side has fallen. I think this is all this stuff in his mind. Like, it's not just that we're going to have a battle. All these dominoes are going to fall. What other horrors are going to happen because we're busy fighting a war, you know? And this is one of those big horrors that is happening because of it.
No, I love that you brought that up last week and this week to connect it to that. You know, again, when that line appears in Tech Clones, right? I don't think George is specifically ready to connect it to all these things, but then you're building Clone Wars back to parts of the prequels, right? Hey, let's build out this thought. Let's build out this emotion. Let's build out this lesson. I think these episodes actually build to that type of thing of when Yoda says that and I first hear it, I'm thinking, yeah, we're going to fight some Sith with red lights. And that's part of it. It's all, and this is why you and I talk often about, you know, who's the main villain in Solo, the movie, the Empire and their oppression. That's right. The main enemy. And I love what you're saying. And it's like, this is diving into the Clone Wars and all aspects around it, how it's fueling and the fire of the dark side in so many ways.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then I love that this arc also just in the big picture really touches on a couple of ongoing stories. Just the setup that it is getting harder and harder for any society to be neutral in the war, right? Because it starts with the separatists basically coming to the planet that these Togruta colonists are on and saying, like, well, this planet's ours now. There's no not taking a side, right? That's a big picture thing that has been developing over the entire animated series, that there's no escaping the war, the larger it gets. I think we're also moving forward on the big picture really explicitly about how competent Ahsoka is and how much she is coming into her own is highlighted a couple points in this arc. And then it is really important, just a huge canon thing to me. And one of the things that stuck in my head is that this is this confirmation that Anakin has not told basic truths of his life to Ahsoka. Yeah. And this is so much, there's a lot of ways that Anakin is challenged, but on a real functional level, there's a lot in this arc where he is just slipping towards violence being absolutely fine with him.
Uh-huh. Big slippery slope, right? He's stepped in that shower and there's no little grippy flower things to save you.
Yep. Yep. Final thing for me on the big picture reaction, I have to be honest that, like, when I first watched this arc, I had some resistance because the sheer amount of abuse my dear favorite Obi-Wan Kenobi takes. And I had some resistance watching this, like, come on, Obi-Wan had find a way out. And it was really fun for me to rewatch this and go, okay, don't just be upset because your favorite's being punched. Yeah. Look at exactly what he's doing and why and when and what does it mean. And I felt so much better about the absolute punishment that Obi-Wan takes.
I'm watching this one. We'll talk about it a little bit more. This, and then when he goes, it just made me think of that moment where he kicks General Grievous in the shin. I'm like, Obi-Wan, you've been through so much. You should know better.
Come on, man. Learn some lessons. All right, let's get into the morals of the episode. We always like to talk about the morals that appear on the actual screen at the top of the episode's three morals this time around. So here are the three morals. Where we are going always reflects where we came from. Those who enslave others inevitably become slaves themselves. And finally, great hope can come from small sacrifices. What do you make of these morals? Did any of them speak to you?
I think where we are going always reflects where we came from is one that haunts me as I constantly try to break back bad habits or change things about my life or my career. I think perhaps because, the moment you're pressing play in these episodes, you know, we're getting some maybe darker stuff in Star Wars. I really love the last one. We've been talking so much about hope versus fear. That is the core of Star Wars in many ways. Great hope can come from small sacrifices. Absolutely love that. Love that its place in this arc, because you want this all to kind of end up okay. And I really like that one.
Yeah, no, it is. After a dark arc, it is nice to have one that is hopeful. And also, I think that idea, great hope can come from small sacrifices. You know, for me, that's one of those messages that reminds me that in my opinion, Star Wars is this grand operatic thing, and we're not all going to be fighting with laser swords or, you know, saving people from falling out of weird prison structures. But it can still apply to our day-to-day life of, like, you know, it's so easy to scroll through social media and feel like there are all of these problems. How is anything that I do going to make a dent? And kind of being reinforced that idea of, like, but it's worth it if you do a small thing, a small sacrifice, and it helps, you know, even one other person a little bit. That is good, you know?
Yeah, spinning wheel of hope can start with a small push, I think, and I like what that means. And the other ones are powerful as well, and I think probably at the core of the arc more than anything, especially as it is, you know, for Anakin, who makes, we know, some big mistakes coming, but a lot of it, I want to talk about where he came from and how maybe he didn't get a chance to fix that.
Yeah, exactly. I like those other two as well, but in the general scope of these Clone Wars morals, I feel like those are both pretty directly related to the big ideas we're going to be talking about.
Indeed.
So let's dive in. What did you feel were big themes or big ideas at stake in these episodes? How did you break it down?
I want to start with some of the Anakin stuff here, and if you all listen, you know, sometimes I go wonderful, weird, therapeutic places and dive it in. And not this. These are things that I think are present in the episode, and the episode makes me think about. There's a lot of trauma, the processing of trauma and unhealed wounds. And I'm focusing on Anakin. And I think I described it as a righteous rage that emerges because of his past. I think we're sympathetic to his journey and have try to have understanding of where we know he came from. Yeah, you'd mentioned how he kept it from Ahsoka. And I just... Yeah, it starts that place, but we know rage is danger. Danger Ranger, is that it? It's a dangerous pill to take because it feels so good. It feels so right, and it's so poisoning as well. So to watch him in this arc, to watch where he ends up, because when he's under kind of control of the queen, so to speak, even I'm like watching these episodes kind of going, just lightsaber her.
you want there is an instinct to find the easy path, and this arc I think is partially about, like,
and I'm not saying this is all like totally in this episode, but part of the fun of this is what does this make you think about Star Wars as a whole and the stories we love and we love to break down and to see that that young boy with hope and Phantom Menace and how it went awry pretty bad, but it kind of, we make little jokes every now and then of Yoda and Mace and Ki-Adi-Mundi being a little mean to him, you know, I'm cold, sir. I just wonder if that you give someone space, but Anakin didn't get to heal, process it at all. I'm not asking him to forget where he came from, forget what happened. But he struggled to put his path behind him. So Obi-Wan kind of mentions that, and it's not that easy. So this is a great point to, like, hey, did he have a chance to have a conversation about a healthy form of processing this versus swallowing what I have always called the emotional hand grenade that at some point is going to explode? And did the Jedi help with that process? Were they built to help with that process? I'm not even putting any blame on it. I'm for justice for the Jedi. But it made me think of all that because it's so present, particularly in that first episode.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that is the tragedy of the relationship between Obi-Wan and Anakin that I think you get to see in these little blips of that Obi-Wan kind of understands what Anakin is going through. And we know that Obi-Wan is sympathetic, but he kind of struggles to help him, right? He struggles to find a way to say, it is absolutely okay that you are in pain and rage because of what happened to you and your mother. But let's work together to find a way to acknowledge those things and deal with them so you don't act on them when you don't want to and hurt yourself, right? Like, you get the sense that maybe, much like that great Revenge of the Sith scene with Yoda, where Yoda gives Anakin great information, but he does not give it to him in a way that helps Anakin in any way, right? You know, and it's so the, like, you know, you can't just give the people the information, right? You have to, as a mentor, help them, manifest the information. And I think, I totally agree with you. I think that we're absolutely seeing throughout this arc example of characters who can't or won't move on from the past and a few who can. Like, there's a nice contrast. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. So yeah, even some stuff at the end with the Torgruta is a little bit more of a healthy step forward.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think for me, it's framed so clearly that Anakin's actions are motivated by his past, right? Not just as a slave, obviously that, but then what I was also struck by is, like, this arc is a really, like, fractured manifestation of his dream that he talks about in The Phantom Menace, right?
Yes, it is.
It says, I dream I became a Jedi and came back and freed all the slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And he's freeing slaves in this episode, but it doesn't look heroic or joyful. It looks like he is casually slaughtering people that he feels he has a right to casually slaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Not stopping them. They need to be stopped.
Yeah.
You know, people need to be rescued and the Zygerians need to be stopped. But there is a very specific energy to the way he's just like, I'm judge, jury, and executioner, and you die now.
Well, there's so many. We're seeing so much of it in Clone Wars season 3 and 4. And four, you know, 3 and 4, big things, serious things start happening. Not that they aren't present in the first two, of course. In fact, think of some of the Mandalore stuff in season 2, where it is this constant roadmap for Anakin to perhaps see and make better choices going forward. And he does sometimes, and a lot of times he doesn't. And a lot of times you just see the Krennic. And I take that as a little bit of a lesson for not us just to point out and go, hey, that's like the Return of the Jedi thing, or that's like Revenge of the Sith, but to look at it and go, life does that too. This is why that first one, I said, it haunts me, that first moral of where we're going always reflects where we came from. And bad, I just boil it down, I'm just giving an example of bad habits. But for Anakin, it's just like, in three acts, this keeps playing out over and over and over again across the galaxy. And you keep making sometimes worse decisions than before, but maybe you survive. Maybe you get out of it by the skin of your teeth. Maybe you save the day, thinking back some of the brain invader worm stuff, you know, where he kind of rushes in, but hey, maybe it ends up okay. And so how it all just keeps flowing into his eventual fall.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There is that great moment where he and Ahsoka are, you know, getting closer to rescuing the Togruta, and he just rushes in after he opens the door and just like, yeah, there would have been a lot of ways you could have force pushed them. You could have hacked a hand off, and he just slaughters them, right?
And they cut away to Ahsoka.
Yeah, and she gives a little like, come on, master, right? Yeah. And so like, I had... forgot about that shot, and it's so big to Anakin's arc, because it is that slippery slope of the Zygerians need to be stopped, and the Jedi philosophy is clearly, if you know it's life or death, mm-hmm. so be it. The Zygerians have made their choice, but you can see it's such a slippery slope from Anakin's mindset to me is, well, look, they have done something awful, and they deserve to die.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But is that because of what they represent about your pain in the past, or is the way you're just cutting them down helping rescue the people you're doing? And if you can get to that mental place of, they've wronged the galaxy, so I can just slaughter them. That's mm-hmm. That's just a step away from they have personally wronged me.
Yeah.
And now I have, you know, in my own mind, my permission, you know, and that's what Sidious is working on, right? Of saying like, yeah, of course, Anakin, it's natural. The Dooku cut off your arm, the Tusken Raiders, killed your mom. Of course, anybody who wrongs you deserves to die. That's totally natural. Good job, buddy.
this is in sports terms, he is pushing the football of hate down the field.
Yep.
Just that one more yard, one more first down. And I even, for the second episode, there's a lot of this talk of, you know, sacrificing principles of the relationship of the Jedi and the Republic, which is completely up for scrutiny, being scrutinized. But I wrote that on this note of it. It's given into fear for seemingly good causes at first. Fear motivates Anakin again, time and time again. But a lot of it is really saving his mother, saving Padme. Of course, these are good things. And if we look at Star Wars as these morality tales, old George and the 12-year-old talk there again and again and again. This is, again, signposts. See how he keeps doing this? See how he keeps doing this? See how each one is just, the slope is more slippery every time.
Yeah.
And I love that these episodes really get into that, as well as some of the universe, galaxy-related stuff of, hey, there's slavery in the galaxy and, you know, blah, 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 those issues as well. But this is the Anakin stuff really moves these episodes.
Yeah, and I really like that it isn't just Anakin, right? This theme that's really pointed out by that moral, this big idea of moving on from the past or not, is really reflected in the big groups. The Zygerians want their old empire back. That's their whole thing. It wasn't like, we're just starting this up. They so want the past back. They feel they deserve the past, right? I wrote down this quote of, long before this war, you Jedi destroyed the great Zygerian slave empire. Everything is being motivated. The Zygerians are being motivated by vengeance and hatred. It's not even like they're trying to do the auction and the Jedi are stopping them. It's like, they're trying to work the Jedi into the auction so they can punish them.
Yes. Yes.
You know, Darth Dinar is explicitly like, I'm supposed to have left this planet, but I stayed behind to break a Jedi. You know, like everybody wants to break a Jedi because they have not let go of the past. They're, you know, working through their trauma of what they think is their trauma of losing this great empire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, we know that the Sith clings to things, but I thought it was great that even in this brief, like, two-line appearance from Sidious, he's, like, clinging to the past. His quote to Dooku is, long have Sith empires been built on the backs of slaves. To carry on this tradition, we will require millions. Super scary, shut down their operation because I don't want competition.
Yeah.
But it's also yet another reflection of, you know, an individual or a larger group who is all about obsessed with getting back what they had.
Mm. Yeah.
And then I think in a positive light, there isn't a heavy hand on it, but the choice of the people who are victimized being the Togruta is clearly on purpose, right? Because Ahsoka brings it up a couple times. She says, when they're wondering where the Togruta went, she said, vanished, impossible. Those are my people. Right. Not even, you know, it seems like she has this emotional connection. She really, you know, firmly says at the end, I'm going to help my people. Right. She makes a thing about it, how they're her people. But it seems like it is about compassion, not about, there's nothing in this arc where Ahsoka crosses a line and handles the situation differently because they are her people. It's just that she feels this connection to her past, I think. What did you make of all that?
Not at the risk of offending old generation Star Wars fans, it's kind of this more proof of Anakin, Ahsoka, being the best example of Jedi. I'll just say that clickbaity headline title. Not that she's perfect and doesn't come to, you know, have valuable lessons and this is her journey, her story. But it's this idea of where we know she ends up. Where we know Anakin ends up, two different feelings, right? Two different things, emotions swirling around those final moments with them in the Clone Wars, not counting season 7 we are blessed to get. But if you talk about just where we end with Ahsoka and the main arcs of Clone Wars, I think you said it well. I'm comparing this to, say, the Tusken Raider incident, Attack of Clones, which was, you know, more specific to his mother and some of the issues. And again, we're not saying this. All this is easy for Anakin.
No,
you know, this isn't buck up, kid. Take a lap, hit the shower, so you'll feel great. This is, you know, it's important stuff.
Yeah, it's not walk off your emotional trauma, Anakin.
Yeah.
Work through it appropriately so you don't hurt yourself and others.
But I look at that and look at how Sidious leaned into that. Well, yeah, man, you killed the Raiders. And how this is Ahsoka and her people. There should be. You would think the same thing. She would go lightsabers out. And just start hacking people in half. And she does not make that decision. She takes a different way, a different path. And I'm not saying she's like, you know, she's the perfect one. I don't mean that in a fighting way, like I'm on a debate show, but time and time again, when faced with choices, she makes different ones than Anakin that I think end up are just better, more healthy, more right.
Yeah, I think what I really appreciate the more I watch the Clone Wars animated series is sometimes it's pointed out really directly and other times it's just there that Anakin and Ahsoka share compassion, deep, deep, deep compassion for others. But where Anakin allows that compassion to curdle into fear and anger and violence, Ahsoka consistently manages to keep it about, well, if I care about that person, then what can I do to help them and keep the focus on the people that she cares about rather than her own fears and anxieties?
Well, perfectly said. Not just well said, perfectly said, because that really just the example I was thinking of earlier. Just, you know, even Anakin has been a few times where he has lost contact with her and how he reacts and how he does it, and they're valuable lessons. And some days, yeah, you rush in and you save the day, and that might be a Band-Aid on a bigger problem going on within Anakin.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, that kind of funneled into, along with this moving on from the past, I think one of the other really big ideas for me of this arc is about compassion, in that idea of, is it a strength or a weakness, right? We see this villain trope certainly in Star Wars, but in lots of other places of like, I'm actually more powerful because I don't care about anyone, and you caring about other people, Superman or Spider-Man or whoever, is your greatest weakness. This dives into that in such interesting ways and ties it specifically to Jedi philosophy. And I feel like in the big picture, we see all of the Zygerians, all the bad guys, really trying to prove that compassion is weakness. And then in contrast, we see a lot of moments where the heroes actually win by working together and by being together. A couple examples, you know, the Zygerians just have this constant assumption that they can leverage the Jedi's compassion against them, right? By threatening to bomb the hostages like Darth Sidonar does, dropping the Togruta from the cages, torturing a Togruta, you know, for Obi-Wan's defiance. They even a lot of just direct quotes. The Queen says, when Kenobi realizes he cannot help those around him, his spirit will break and he will be mine. Mm-hmm. The Queen makes this kind of explicit, seductive argument to Anakin that Anakin and the Jedi in general, but Anakin in particular, enslaves himself by caring about others. You know, there's that conversation where he says, I don't see commitment as slavery. And she says, oh, it is when it comes at the cost of yourself.
Yeah.
Really pressing on that sort of Jedi idea of being selfless and really pushing on that specific perfect nerve of Anakin of like, well, you're supposed to be selfless. But in your journey so far in life to be selfless, it means you've lost a lot of people. So what would happen if you cared a little bit less about others? And you know, are you just being a slave to this Jedi philosophy? And then, you know, that it's actually the plot point, right? That she is trying to demonstrate that she can control Anakin by saying she'll free his friends if he serves her willingly, and just sort of like torture test this relationship with Anakin. And kind of last point for me on the bad guy side of it, I think it's really interesting that, you know, the Queen is making all these arguments about, you know, compassion is a weakness and I can use that to control you and tie you up in knots about your own Jedi philosophy. But it seems to me that the Queen, everything falls apart for the Queen because she actually herself becomes a little too attached to Anakin, or either him or the concept of breaking him. And that's what messes everything up for her, right? She has no connection, no loyalty. The Prime Minister calls the Sith, who fulfill their role of Qui-Gon's bigger fish. And she dies, you know, saying, no escape for any of us. You were right, Skywalker. I'm a slave just as you are. So all of this perspective from the bad guys that compassion is weakness. What are your thoughts or takes on that big pressure point that the villains are doing to the heroes throughout?
I think it's fascinating how you said tie in knots, and I love, you know, part of the prequels of analyzing the Jedi, and it's very easy to focus on some of the stuff she's saying around the idea of, you know, what do you Jedi do? You're generals in the army, and we know this is like, that's probably legit criticism, but she's delivering it to Anakin in this way that is absolutely setting them up for what comes later. I love the way you're describing it. Of like, I mean, you sure? Look at all the people you've lost. You didn't have to lose them. And so you are in service to them, which just fuels Anakin's thoughts on what he's about to do and what he's thinking and how he gets there. This is fulfilling, one of the big criticisms of Revenge of the Sith back in the day. If I remember correctly, I think I was part of these conversations of, I don't know, he just turns to the dark side so fast. and again, it may be in the movie, maybe, I don't know, you need one or two other beats. I don't think so now, but maybe I didn't then. But it was already at play in Phantom Menace. It's already at play in Attack of the Clones, and now this show gets to really dig into that. And she's saying those kind of things. It's a bad faith argument, but she's saying some things that make sense. And of course it's going to twist in Anakin. And I think Obi-Wan and Ahsoka are going to have a different way of looking at it. Yoda, Mace, everyone's going to have a different way of looking at it. And other people are going to be like, yeah, we shouldn't be generals. Yeah, we are sacrificing our stuff. And yeah, we might be in too deep to the Republic here. But you always talk about Joseph about context or justice for the Jedi of some of the purpose. And Anakin's purpose is a little different than theirs. And I think it's well played. And it ends up making sense to me because the first watch through, I was like, I totally forgot. He just kind of, he's flirting with her and he's playing this game. He's undercover. At what point would you not just chop her head off? And to see how it's being used and by Melchin and Gilroy just writing it so well of just like, now you can see where Palpatine's making his magic. Now we can see where he's twisting that knife. She is a kind of an example of that. And again, call it this signpost on the road to failure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really like it. It's one of the things that makes the episode kind of dark and complex for me because, Anakin's plan is a relatively familiar one. It's a different kind of much more awful version of, I'll pretend to be the guard. You pretend to be the prisoner. We've seen that a bunch. That's basically, kind of a practical plan to get close to the queen. Mm-hmm. But then with this wanting to charm her, right? And wanting to stay close to her, there's even kind of a slightly upsetting joke about Anakin being good at playing the master.
It feels
like he's dancing with, I don't just want to get, I don't want to just stop the queen. Obviously he does, mm-hmm. but it's like he wants to get close to her and control her or beat her, not physically, like defeat her.
Yeah.
On some like philosophical level or just like gut level, like he almost wants to, like, he doesn't just want to stop her, like he just wants to cut down the other Zygerians. He wants to like dominate the situation, to have that sense of control and sense of power that makes him feel like, if I have this, if I'm in control, then no bad things can ever happen, then I can fix it. And it feels like a little bit of a manifestation of that,
Yeah, it's an interesting relationship. I don't want to say compelling, like I'm rooting for slavers. But it's an interesting storyline. It's an interesting relationship between them two. And look, there's this little bit of seduction going, a little bit of flirtation. She's a pretty coyote bean, and Anakin, his undercover job taking him too close to the edge there, buddy. And it's all wrapped up and it's all intriguing. The second viewing was more rewarding for me the first time of really stopping to analyze why Anakin, again, I'm rooting for him to do bad things here, I guess, but, just playing along and how you could do that. And it just, again, it playing against the backdrop of his overall story, it was powerful. And she's an interesting character because of that.
Yeah. And I'm with you. Like I said, when I first watched this arc, I had some frustrations. One of my sometimes pet peeves is I don't want the Jedi to be underpowered, right? So I think I always had myself a little bit in that headspace as well as like being shocked by the sheer amount of abuse poor Obi-Wan takes. But watching this again to see, along with Ahsoka being a contrast to Anakin, I feel like Obi-Wan is, right? Of like when he challenges Darth Dinar, I don't think he has any misunderstanding that he's going to get pounded and barely be able to keep his own. But he is doing it without question to save the other Togruta, right? And he doesn't, that's the thing, is he's not feeling this like need to prove something or to dominate the situation. He's just being selfless, right? Yeah. And then even once he gets captured and is on Kadavo and he's aware that, okay, this is what the battle is. They want to break my spirit. I know I can't push back. I have to wait for the right opportunity because if I do anything, they will hurt the other Togruta. So of course I can't have that happen, but I'm not going to let them break my spirit,
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he is just, this is an episode where it looks like he is taking a lot of physical abuse, because he is, but I feel like it is showing the strength of his spirit.
Hey, justice for Kenobi.
Yeah. So in this grand argument of is compassion a strength or a weakness, it certainly is a tool to hurt people. But I think there is this great contrast where we see a lot of very specific moments of people working together, which feels like it's on purpose to me to contrast that. Like Anakin and Ahsoka, you know, having to, you know, being pinned down by their own sniper droids. But if they work together and take out one another's sniper droids, they can take out twin bombs at the same time. That's not that subtle of a metaphor.
Yeah.
You know, that is very much about, you know, alone we can't succeed, but together we can, right?
I 100% agree. Everyone kind of playing their part, including some big heroic stuff at the end with Yularen. And what's that, Coburn? Is that Coburn's the other guy's name?
I think so. Yeah. And there's that specific line of dialogue of when Anakin gets to Obi-Wan and Obi-Wan says, Anakin, you must realize this is a fight you cannot win alone. And Anakin said, who said I was alone? And the triumphant Republic swoops in to save the day, right?
Yeah, love that moment.
It's like, in that line of dialogue is calling out this idea of like, yes, absolutely, compassion can be weaponized to hurt people, but it is also the better path and how people succeed together as well. And I think that the fact that the whole episode is really, the whole arc is bookended by the Dakruta being like, we would just like to have our colony where we do the arts.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, they are joining the Republic. They are becoming a part of something larger.
Absolutely. And even in the opening newsreel of this great colony of arts, painting, music, and podcasting happening here on this planet. But in the Clone Wars, I forget the exact line, I didn't write it down, but in the Clone Wars, that ain't possible. Just sticking by yourself. And that could be, that's a haunting, maybe warning at the beginning, but where it ends up, you're so right. And look, this is the big theme. This is Anakin's question to his mom or statement to his mom that we really connect with this a lot in Star Wars now, up to Rise of Skywalker. And so there it is again on display.
Yeah. And that is a perfect segue into the last idea I wanted to discuss. So I really do like that each kind of major group, they're not just there doing their actions. There is real focus on what is their ideology, right? It is significant that the Togruta of Kyros are this peaceful society, right? That they're just trying to Bob Ross their way through the war. And that's because that's what they believe in, right?
You got me. Good one.
They're like, they're a beautiful society, right? They're like, great. This is, full expression of creativity. Beautiful, right?
Happy accidents all around.
Happy accidents everywhere. And then I love that the Zygerians in a lesser arc could have just been evil, right? But they are fully aware of and absolutely verbalize their horrific ideology, right? That's one quote from the Queen of slavery is the natural order of things. The weak deserve nothing more than to kneel before the strong. They are. It's not like, I don't know, I was just raised this way. It's like, no, our society is built on this perspective that strength is everything.
Well, this is kind of what's got up top of just like, this is a very purposeful use of this kind of scenario. You could easily make a fantasy sci-fi story, just be like, you know, it'd be great. Let's toss in some slaves. You know, right. And it could be so irresponsibly used as a story piece. This is not. And you analyze it and you deal with it. And you deal with it in Star Wars. You deal with it for what it means to the bigger picture of the dark side. That Sidious speech is pretty chilling.
Yeah.
Pretty chilling. We're going to need it. Slavery is a tool for the rise of the Sith. And we're back, baby. And they're back. Let's do it. Yeah. That's big stuff.
Yeah. Zygerians are a little too close to us philosophically, so can't let them run with it. Yeah. And then we've already discussed it a lot, but there is obviously just a lot on display of like, well, who are the Jedi, right? Well, they're selfless and they give of themselves to save others. What does that actually mean? How often is that a weakness? How often is that a strength? We get Queen Miraj's speech. I agree with you about just totally being like, a hypocritical, like, well, you're not good either, Jedi. you know, you're slaves to the Republic, so you're not strong anymore. And we hate you because you destroyed our empire, and we want to put our boot on our neck to prove that we can. And seeing how the Jedi respond, and then this thing I really wanted to ask you about, since there's this highlight throughout the arc of what are different groups' ideologies, including the Jedi's selfless compassion. We get that beat at the end where Agris, I believe, is kind of smugly saying, well, a Jedi doesn't kill an unarmed prisoner. And then Obi-Wan kind of gives the look to Rex, and Rex has the classic, I'm no Jedi.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that? What did you feel like for you that moment, man?
I thought about this a lot, Joseph. I felt it was a dirty, dirty cheat from Kenobi, and I loved it. And, you know, it is just what it is. I don't think those two are on a slippery slope. You could be, again, we're having a lot of fun discussing these three episodes of an animated program that we love. None of this is easy. None of this should be easy in life. It shouldn't be easy. These decisions, maybe they should be, but you know what I mean? It's like there's always these complicated shades of gray. And this was one of those ones that like, yeah, this is a shade of gray. Kill him. And it's not just that he hits him in the chest. The chair then flies into the wall
and explodes a little.
His face is smashed in.
Yeah. No, I feel like it is a moment of humanity. And I would probably say, even though he's my favorite, a moment of weakness from Obi-Wan. Like, yeah. Obi-Wan does go through a lot. And I feel like in a different moment, Rex would do the I'm no Jedi and pull back. And Obi-Wan would be like, Rex. That look to me is like, yeah, no, I'm not going to break my code.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to stop you from following your heart, Rex, is a little bit of an Obi-Wan slippery slope, I think.
I'm going to put the money on the counter. And if you take it, I'll turn around.
Yeah, I didn't steal it. I just looked the other way.
And I'm okay with it. Obi-Wan is owed this one after what he went through in this episode, all these episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it kind of hints at, we spent a lot of time with the clones, and we know Rex isn't just doing that to do it. Rex has got a code, and this fits in his code.
It checks out.
It checks out. All right, we had a lot to say about that arc, because there's so much going on in it, but before we take our break, we always like to check in in ways that this arc speaks to the larger story, morality, perspective of Star Wars. What did you think about there?
I think there was a lot of the big stuff. We touched upon a little bit of it. The slavery is this tool for the rise of the Sith, and this big picture there, and all kind of fuels this idea of the dark side having this belief of the weak needing to kneel before the strong. You mentioned the Queen's quote, which is just to me this horrible example of power and greed, and the power you seek will never be enough. We see it with the Queen. We know Dooku's got to experience that later on. We know the Zygerians. This is an extreme example of this power grab and how the concept of serving feels like submission to the Queen, right? There's this just like, it's like, you have compassion and empathy. What a fool you have. You're submitting to other people. You should be great and powerful and strong. You should be brave, right? That's what having no fear is. I've seen the t-shirts. No fear means you're strong. I think it is a comment on the Jedi and their ideals being compromised to some in the galaxy, or just a Jedi being in this complicated position. And I like how it just kind of ask those big questions. This is some stuff that I don't have all the perfect answers for. I love, this is what the Jedi are going through during this time. And it's tough stuff, tough questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that, you know, that I guess truth to me that sometimes, even if you really disagree with someone, they can bring up a point that you find is valid. And a lot of times it can be just a whataboutism, right?
I was going to call her clean whataboutism.
Queen, what about, right? Because it is like, look, here's what you do. That's awful. Like, okay, what are you doing? And that idea that to her compassion is absolutely weakness. But if maybe her prime minister and her had a healthier relationship, she would not have lost everything.
Yeah.
Including her life. So maybe connection and compassion isn't all bad.
Yep. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the thing that really resonated for me. One of the many things that I love about the movie Solo, and I know you and I both love it, and this is something that popped for me in that kind of first weekend of viewing, and we've talked about it a little bit, but I feel like Solo really presents these kind of two options for looking at how people and systems interact with one another, right? Kira has this bittersweet opinion that this is the way it is. Everybody serves somebody. Yeah. And when Rio is passing, he is kind of underlining Val's philosophy that everybody needs somebody. You know, Kira doesn't think she's going to get out of this trap. Han thinks he's alone, but he really needs somebody. He's with Chewie. You know, could go on and on about that film. But the point is, I feel like that big idea of how do you look at the world, the galaxy? Does everybody serve somebody? Are you always going to be underneath somebody else? Or is it more everybody needs somebody? We you know, we need support and structure to get through this together. You know, is it all of us with linked hands, or is it everybody is on top of somebody else?
Hands across the water. Yeah, no, look, and I think a little bit ties, maybe I'm off base here, Joseph, but like ties to some of the stuff with Anakin I was saying up top of left to deal with some of these big things alone. And that's a problem, I think, that can happen in even our society. And I'll say, but typically with men who feel as though they have to be left on an island to be this strong type, I can handle it, when really maybe you can't, and you maybe need the help of others, and maybe you need the different people around, maybe you need to ask for help. And I think Anakin has been allowed to, again, swallow some emotional hand grenade. And I think it all fuels into some of the bigger choices, fuels the bigger choices, I should say. Yeah. So anyways, I don't know if I'm off base there, but I think it connects in some way.
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. I think Anakin is coming from the perspective of everybody needs somebody. And through this, you know, manipulation and his pain and his fear of, hey, if I'm a selfless Jedi, you know, what wants am I denying? You know, he ends up in an everybody serves somebody situation, yes. Literally, and philosophy.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I wrote down the center of Anakin and fear-based attachment leads to him taking a deal that will give him the power to keep those he loves alive. Where have we heard that before? Lost on an island, left alone. This is the decision he makes, and this is the decision he'll make again, fatally, quite frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My last big picture observation is just a small one, but it's one that really entertains me, and it tracks through the Clone Wars. How much Dooku, unaware of the big picture plot of Sidious, just really wants Obi-Wan and Anakin to just die already? They are just an absolute annoyance, and he just wants them to die.
We'll discuss one of the best comedy moments yet in the second half.
I think we have the same thing written down. So let's take a quick break and get to that. We will be back in just a moment.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the Clone Wars arc, the absolute horror of the Zygerians. We are going to talk about some of the moments that we really enjoyed and responded to. We're going to start with action. There is a lot of action in these three episodes. Some of it quite upsetting, I think, but some of it very fun. What were some of the fun moments for you?
Look, a slaver going face first into a monitor after being stabbed in the chest, I think is fun. Comedy wins. There's a lot. Look, there's a, you know, Star Wars drawing from so many different genres and motifs and styles and movies. There's a lot there. The Zygerians, to me, I couldn't really find any specific notes in doing research for this episode, but they have a lot of Egyptian vibes to me, including the slavery side.
Yeah, I would definitely say like ancient world for sure, right?
Ancient world. Yeah, I want to make sure. Yeah, I'm talking about, yeah, biblical times here, kids. Yeah, so there was a lot of that. So there's that. But there's the first episode has a lot of Old West action. We got some Star Wars Western stuff. And to me, I felt you had an Old West horse chase that's just speeder bike chases. And even at one point when they jump on the AT-RTs, Anakin and Ahsoka, they're on like a couple slow clod hopping horses trying to get back into action there. But I loved all of it. I called it the Easy Rider Speeders with the sidecars there.
Yeah, no, that was really just like, wow, the Clone Wars is just having fun, right? That suddenly we were introduced to biker droids. I mean, they don't look that different, but, you know, they call them biker droids, which is great. And then, like, yeah, the fact that these are speeders, but wait, they have swiveling sidecars with blasters on them.
Dennis Hopper's yeah. in the sidecar shooting.
Yeah, I think I'm not an entire expert on the timeline of the Clone Wars toy line, but by now I think the toy line itself had slowed down a little bit, so they weren't making anything, but it felt like, hey, you guys want a new speeder toy? Because this is cool. Like, that's in a great way. And I like that one beat where Ahsoka's blasting away, and then she just jumps off and cuts the head off a droid and jumps back onto her sidecar.
Okay, yeah, okay. I wrote that down, too, because I called it, where did I put it up, but just... I mean, she chops his head off like it's like she's Dexter. Like it, she's just like, oh, I got a code and I'm going to kill. Like it was tipped of a cap to Ahsoka there. It was great stuff.
Yeah. Tonight's the night. Indeed. A little Dexter Ahsoka crossover. Yeah. So that initial fight was great. I try not to write down all Obi-Wan things, but I wrote down a lot of Obi-Wan things.
That's fair.
I really liked the obviously when Darth Sidonar is just beating the stuffing out of poor old Kenobi. I like that moment where Obi-Wan is still focusing on the mission, which is to keep Darth Sidonar distracted and not knowing that Anakin and Ahsoka are you know defusing the bombs.
Right.
So Dinar is distracted by the message on the comm unit. So Obi-Wan punches him and then shatters the comm unit with Darth's head.
Yes.
It's like that's, you know, an action move that is tactical.
Yeah. I mean, you have more. I mean, feel free. Kenobi yourself out here. This is the weekend of Kenobi. So let's do it.
There's also just it was satisfying, you know, when in the second episode, I like the Breeze Axe. There's a lot of great stuff with them. The big gilded or the big gliding monsters, gliding lizards.
Oh, yeah.
But there's that moment where once Obi-Wan has discovered, I believe, Governor Roshti, the poor Togruta, in the pit, and he jumps up on the Breezak and then throws the Zygerian directly down into the pit that he just rescued the governor from.
Yes. A lot of people go do some falling in these episodes.
These are some great falling arcs. Yeah.
What are those creatures called again?
Breezax.
I see. I know you're still prepared for any trivia questions, contests that break out among us. I just called them flying lizards, and now I want one.
Oh, they're great. There's that one moment where you see that they're kind of like almost hopping on the air, like they're flapping, but it almost looks like they're hopping on a cloud. It's great.
I love
great stuff.
Love lizards.
Another moment in the second episode that I liked is. It was kind of an action moment, but it was more a moment of resistance when Ahsoka is in that cage dangling off the building where she just gives that slight push to the Zygerian and he almost falls over the edge and then he electrocutes her. So it's that like,
yeah,
I know you kind of have me in a cage, but also please be aware that I could throw you off this building at any moment.
Yeah. We should point out at one point again, Anakin gets electrocuted, a long line of Anakin, get ready.
Oh, yeah. No, I had that down in the lore. But yes, he gets electrocuted by whips and once again by Sith lightning. He's taken a lot of Sith lightning.
I'm not laughing at you, Anakin, and I'm just wishing you could have picked up on the clues.
I want that special edition of Revenge of the Sith now that we have the Clone Wars animated series when Palpatine says to him, he's like, well, he cut off your arm. It's only right you wanted vengeance. He also shot you with Sith lightning many, many times.
Many times.
Yeah. What else do you got on your action list?
Well, in that Kenobi fight there at the beginning, which reminds me of that Kids in the Hall ongoing sketch of McCullough and McKinney playing the troubled relationship, boyfriend-girlfriend, and he's always getting his ass kicked, and she's always yelling, stay down! Stay down! Just Kenobi, but he was doing his job. But in that, when it ends, when it finally ends, and he's like, finally, took long enough, and he crunches those droids, the assassin.
Yeah.
Droids. So, in watching this episode, I'm setting up. A lot of times when I watch these the first time, I'm setting up the notes. You know, I'm kind of looking up, looking down, looking up, looking down. That happened, and he crunched them. And I literally went, whoa. I play it again. I was like, I had no memory of that. And it is one of those, that's pretty cool Star Wars moments. I loved it.
It's a really great moment. And I really like it because it shows you that, like, yeah, he's doing his best to kind of fight back against Darth Stinar, but he's just waiting, right? And then he's like, nope, look, this was me. I was holding back on my power on purpose.
Yes, yes.
I meant to get my ass kicked, says Obi-Wan Kenobi, by shattering those two droids.
I meant to do that, yes.
Yeah, that was a great moment. A great Obi-Wan moment. Another Obi-Wan moment for me, jumping into that third episode, is it is just satisfying after all of the horrible brutality when he gets moving. When he and Rex start fighting back and he ducks that laser blast to the face by just bending over a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then he immediately lifts his arms up and gets the Zygerian to shoot his own bonds off.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and Obi-Wan even has a look of, huh, imagine that.
Yeah, nice, nice. I still got it. Yeah, and we talked about it, but I wrote it down here. It's one of those moments where you're almost like, cool, when Anakin plunges into that hallway, and I think he does the behind-the-back final stab.
Yeah.
You know, and there's that part of you's like, oh, you're right, yeah, wait, oh, no. And you get that question look from Ahsoka. It's a really effective moment of action. I'm not going to call it just fun,
because
it's some darkness, but it's still cool.
Yeah, I love the last couple arcs here of really justice for the AT-RTs. Normally, I think they're kind of useless tech. Like, I wouldn't want to be on one. You're up and exposed. Like,
yep.
One of my favorite pieces of tech, but I love the use of it. Then Anakin and Ahsoka doing that super leap off of them, double tapping the X button to get up to the cruiser, the ship. I really like that moment. I thought that was really cool.
Yo, yeah, no, the mega leap there, both from the AT-RTs and then from Anakin and Ahsoka, is really cool.
It's when you have to time that video game leap. You press X, and then you press X again.
And you can really only do that jump, like, halfway through the video game once you have learned the double leap power.
Yeah. After the mentor shows up and says, remember this lesson you learned. Yes.
Exactly. Speaking of cool Jedi moves, man, some good, you know, fighter to fighter action, but in particular, Plo Koon cutting his engines in his Jedi Starfighter, just flying backwards. That was awesome.
In R7, that Joseph had got a 4-exclamation-point note from me. It was really good, right, man. Yeah, it's good. You know, Plo Koon doesn't get a lot of credit. He gets a lot of credit maybe by those in the know, but Filoni's not the only one who appreciates him. That was a good move.
It felt almost like it was justice for Plo Koon, who in Revenge of the Sith gets, you know, shot down in a starfighter in the back like a, you know, clown.
Yeah. It's
like a Keldor clown. And this was like, what if he did the opposite?
It's like Dave is coming to every meeting for four seasons now with this scene. And they're like, no, Dave. And finally they're like, all right, Dave, we're going to put that in. Justice for Plo.
Justice for Plo Koon. And I only have one more beat. Do you have some more?
I had that one there. Anakin destroying the other cannons was a whole good sequence there. You mentioned some of it, but I love that. Yeah, at the moment, again, a lot of people getting tossed off, some in very just frightening, haunting fashion. But Anakin tossing that slaver off the ledge, and they stick with that camera angle for a long time and then cut down. And I guess he survived. I don't know. He lands in a vat of fruit at the at the market there. But I loved that they just, it's so brutal. They just kept with that shot of.
Yeah, they stuck with it for a while, which was great. And it was like the Anakin violence ramping up of like, well, let's go a little bit more of the He-Man where he just throws the villains in the mud. Like, it's okay, he landed on a fruit cart.
Yeah.
I don't think the other Zygerians that he hacked apart with his lightsaber landed on the fruit cart safely.
Yep. And the only final one, we talked a lot about Rex killing Argus there. Anakin and the poor Blixus. Look, I'm not saying I want a Blixus as a pet or that I wouldn't have chopped it up too in that scenario. It's a harrowing sequence, and it's another Star Wars character that likes to, a creature that likes to kill you. But it's just like, look, that thing doesn't know what to do. Is there another way you could push it back into the cage or something? And I'm not seriously criticizing the episode too much, but if I just had this guy, a friend of mine who I've known for years, he's one of those guys that knows I'm a Star Wars fan, but unfortunately he doesn't know how much of a Star Wars fan I am. So he's like, hey, I'm playing Fallen Order. Great game. Yeah. And I wrote back, sure. Wasn't cool with the philosophy of killing innocent animals. Didn't align with Star Wars morals. And he was just like, I'm just trying to say it was a cool game. And I was like, never ask a Star Wars podcaster that question. It was a great sequence. It was a horror sequence. That monster, the mouth, it was just hungry. Just wanted a treat.
Yeah, no, you get that feeling that it's kept on the ship, right? Like like the Anubas, I think, in the Citadel, right? Like, they are probably trained by their not very nice owners to behave that way.
Yeah, again, I get it. If I was in that spot and I had a lightsaber, might do the exact same thing in the moment. But
We got a message a little while back from a listener who was going through playing Jedi Fallen Order, only killing animals when you absolutely have to, because a lot of them you can navigate. They will come and ram you while you're looking for clues. But clearly, this listener had mastered the game and was sharing that he had managed to turn it into a Jedi lesson by going through a lot of the game without hurting anywhere near as many animals.
That you know what? Respect. I'm there for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Final action moment for me is after all of the horror, Ahsoka catching that terrified Togruta and just really being this resounding moment of I am here to save people. That's what this is about. Was really nice.
I actually liked a lot of it. That whole sequence, because another one falls and the couple clones have to save him. One almost falls. It's almost, if it wasn't so tragic, I would say it's comical because I'm like, why is everyone just falling, you clumsies? But it just speaks to the tension of the moment and there to save, the teamwork, the connection, not being alone. I think you're so right to connect it to that. But yeah, I'm there with you on that as well.
Yeah, there were a lot of fallen Togruta, for sure. Let's get on in then on moments of comedy, whimsy, weirdness. What were some of your favorites?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to ever take some of the Kenobi ones there.
Feel free.
I did like the first when he jumps in, because he does this later on with Grievous and the great famous hello there. But Darts is talking, and then Kenobi kind of walks in and does the do tell. he's the best. Kenobi's really a sassy man and doesn't get enough credit for being that. And I like that. And then I'll toss one there and then toss back to you. Just the let's hope Obi-Wan shares our luck, and they do just a smash cut to just ass kicking that's going on.
Yeah, I believe kicking him in the side so hard he gets air. Yeah, it's a brutal one. Yeah. They're just making sad noises. But when Ahsoka's chopping up B1 battle droids near that first bomb, obviously something she has to do. One of them does go, why?
Yes. Yes. If anyone listening, I haven't seen it, but if anyone can find just an interview or anyone involved in Clone Wars talks about the ongoing story of the ballad of the poor battle droids in the Clone Wars, I'd love to know.
Boy, man, I would, if we got an opportunity to talk to Matthew Wood sometimes, I would love to ask him how he feels about that.
Yeah, because it's very clear. It's just from the beginning of the Clone Wars. Very clear. It's used for comedy, but it's also used for These poor things were bred for oppression. They didn't even know.
Exactly. Exactly. Speaking of which, that was one of my other favorite ones. When Darts Dinar programs the tactical droid to blow up, and the tactical droids are almost always much more cold and calculating. Their tactical droids.
Yeah.
He has a, sir, how could you?
Yes. Get it off. Get it off. Yeah, it was.
It's really sad. And also, like, I wrote that down as a moment of comedy, but this is yet another moment of, like, these, you know, the bad guys are walking through life thinking everyone but them is expendable. The only goal is to be more powerful than everybody else, including the people that in theory are there to help you.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Purpose region.
Yeah. On a less deep note, I believe it's the establishing shot of the one of the establishing shots of the second episode when a Kwakian monkey lizard is just knife fighting in the streets.
Yes. There's some great marketplace cameos of, like, you know, species or characters. Nick's card, I think I saw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't look up what the species is he's fighting, but I just love that. Like, this is a brutal place. Look, a monkey lizard's just knife fighting in the streets. It's wild here. Wild.
Love that. Love that. One of my favorites, it's when Dooku arrives. He just horror all around him. He's going to a slaver planet that he's helping to reestablish. He's a Sith Lord, and he's just sitting there with his legs crossed over like he's going to a cotillion. just the inherent comedy of Dooku is one thing I love.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of recognizable species or alliances that we'll talk about in the lore section, but there's a moon or mun watching I forget what the actual word is. The selling of the slaves, the auction. There we go.
Auction. Yeah.
And when they march poor Obi-Wan up, he says the Jedi are not so tough.
Love it.
That is a great one. And then my final one is the one I think both you and I have. So I'm more than happy to have you share your finals as well as that one.
Yeah. No, you're talking about the Dooku sipping a nice drink as the Queen's going on. And he just says he doesn't care. He knows what he's here to do. But when it gets to the Kenobi suffering, he says, I'm listening.
Yeah, he's kind of marching in there to say, this is the way it is. You shouldn't be doing this. I want this to happen. And then the Queen says, Obi-Wan Kenobi is in despair. He says, I'm listening. I think there's a part of me is like, is that too? I'm not bothered by it at all. I love it. But, like, I think at different points in my fandom, I would have been like, is that a little too on the nose of kind of real world of like, what? But it's so funny to me because it, throughout this episode is just like, oh, I want them to die.
Yes. Yes. It goes beautifully into that theme of Dooku, but yeah, no, I love it.
Yeah. By far for me, the comedy whimsy highlight. I'm listening. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any more for you?
There's a great line from, I think it's Kenobi or so. What is happening is attracting plenty of high class scum. I think is
good use of scum. Yes. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Lots of high class scum, which we'll talk about here in the canon lore connections. We mentioned this at the top, but I actually just wanted to ask you about it. So I hadn't known this until we dived in a little bit deeper on this watch, that this arc is an adaptation of a comic book, Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Slaves of the Republic, comic book arc. That I believe was also written in the comics by Henry Gilroy, but written to happen kind of in a different period of the Clone Wars. Asajj Ventress was in it. Ahsoka was younger. So obviously they liked it, wanted to adapt it, but they had to change it up for the television show. So what I wanted to ask you about is, you know, we've been going through this period in modern canon where events aren't erased from comics or books, but when they're brought to the screen, they're a little bit reinterpreted. And, you know, fans have different strong opinions about this. But this was affecting to me of that sort of evidence that EU or Legends, whatever you choose to call it, was never sacred when it came to Star Wars on screen always trumps, right?
Yeah. 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 And look, and it's two sides to it of you and I have expressed our opinions a little bit on some of the Legends EU stuff. And what we've always said is, you know, there's always some good stuff in there. There's always some characters there. And I think this is an example of, yeah, they looked at this and they didn't say this is gospel. They said, yeah, great, let's adapt it. We need to change some things, including the time frame and the designs of the characters, because it was a different time. But also it shows, yeah, there's clearly all through that era, great stuff, great concepts, great things that can still to this day be reworked. And I am always open to that. Thrawn, you bringing him back? Great. All right, let's see how you do it. All right, Mara Jade. Everyone still want Mara Jade? I don't. Let's see how you can do it and do it a little differently, but take a great concept, move it. I think this is a great example on all sides of that discussion of the EU and proof, again, that George back then was like, no, it doesn't matter. Just put it what we want into the story.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's great that Henry Gilroy was clearly involved in adapted the story. And I'm so glad that the story did make it to the screen, because I think it is an important part of this whole era, whole story.
100%. 100%.
Excellent. All right. So onward to some other things. I was confused. I was like, about those birds that pop up. And like, are those Convores? No, those are Kyros birds, or Kyros. So if you're collecting birds in Star Wars, Ken, those are Kyros.
Those are Kyros. Mostly, yeah. It probably may be cousins or something, right? But
maybe, yeah. I mean, the Blixis, we saw this episode. We talked about this last week because in the previous arc with Pon Krell, we meet the Vixis. I'll read again what they have there on Star Wars Wikipedia. They shared a common ancestor with the Wrathbar, Vixis, and Sarlacc, all possessing a large maw, tentacles, and a voracious appetite. Each was native to different worlds, and the different species had adapted separately to become great hunters in their specific environment. And the Blixis's environment apparently is the back of a cargo ship.
Yeah, look, like I said, I'm a big-time animal lover, but, you know, I respect snakes enough to stay away from them. So we all have certain, you know, the Blixis and these Sarlaccs and these Wrathars, you know, not my favorite.
Yep, yep. All big, bitey, tentacle creatures causing problems throughout the galaxy, no matter no matter where they're encountered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not an ancestor with the Blixis, Wrathar, Vixis, and Sarlacc is the Breezak. This is the great Zygerian gliding lizards that we see throughout the episodes, the last two in particular. It's just really cool, isn't it?
Again, I don't love snakes, love lizards, love. I've had some iguanas as pets and our backyard here and a lot of people's backyard. It's been Burbank. Like Grace and I just have this backyard that just attracts 50 lizards every day. And it's like my favorite thing to walk out and try to communicate with them. They run away. So I just love any kind of design like this. This is also why I love, you know, Kenobi's mount in Revenge of the Sith. I love those kind of creatures. So love the design. Love a Breezak. Want one.
Yeah. Yeah. That one shot where they're kind of flap hopping in the air. So great. And the Breezak and, of course, the Zygerians also pop up in Bad Batch. And I think it's a great, in some ways, continuation of this episode from the Zygerian perspective of showing like, yeah, all right, the Republic's fallen. Let's get back to business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're right to point that out, too. I remember we discussed it then, too.
Yeah. A couple of just little things. Waxer and Boyle were the clones under Obi-Wan's command who made friends with Numa back on Ryloth. Waxer sadly died in the previous arc, but we learned in this arc Boyle lives, at least
for now.
So that was nice. Those sniper droidicas that pinned down Anakin and Ahsoka, very cool. I looked them up. They appear in one other Clone Wars, I believe, book, but those were also just damn cool, right?
I actually did make a note of that. I skipped it over, and I guess it was an action moment I wanted to talk about. The droidicas have always been one of my favorite Star Wars designs, even in 1999 when I would tell you otherwise. Absolutely love them, and that's just a great little model. Hey, you know, you have biker scouts, snow troopers, shore troopers. You need to have different droidicas.
Yeah, exactly. I hope they pop up more places because those are awesome.
Yeah.
Moving into one of the big canon lore connections that I'm so curious to hear your opinion about. Not only does R2 carry and then eject a lightsaber for a hero, he does it for Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka, which is a total of 4 lightsabers.
Yeah, yeah.
But then we get it complete with the sequence of nods from the heroes involved and the finger salute from Return of the Jedi. So where are you at with this, Ken? Is this too much R2 shoots a lightsaber poetry?
Yeah, and there's that music cue too, right? Like it's there. Here's the thing. No, at this point, no. I could see at one point maybe me going, I get it. And I could see someone right now saying something, everything, and I wouldn't disagree or would definitely wouldn't fight you on it. I'm also not here to fight with anyone on Star Wars stuff or try to avoid that for my own health. I at the end of the day, I do love it. I do love it. Now, for me, my headcanon goes like this. In trying to get into, because also I think the connection goes, and you did a big Star Wars counseling on Luke's plan in Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
Anakin's plan is not unlike Luke's here. Bunch of things happen and they make the best of it. And so maybe R2 had some conversation with Luke about that. You know, hey, you know, tell you what, put the lightsaber in here. Trust me, this works. How do you know it works? Just trust me. Trust me, yeah. This works.
I like it from the perspective that R2 told Luke, like, look, I'll hold on to your lightsaber. You have whatever plans you want. When those all go south, I will shoot you your lightsaber. You give me the salute. That's what I prefer. That's the gesture that works for me.
That's the one I know.
That's the one I know. That's the one I work with. Then it's all great.
Yeah. Yeah. So and from that angle, again, we always, Star Wars needs to be fun. And I think there nostalgia becomes this dirty word or references become a dirty word. And I understand they can sometimes be heavy handed and overused. This is slightly heavy handed, but I think it's really fun. And also this is what, 2011? We're not, you know, we're in a different time. We're celebrating this kind of stuff more than breaking it apart.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it always has an element of the creators involved, right? I'm sure, you know, if you talk to the director of that episode, I would not be surprised. I shouldn't say I'm sure. I would not be surprised to have that director just say like, that was always my favorite moment. We had an opportunity. It's so great, you know?
Yeah. No, there's a part of that I always think, you know, and again, this is not like this particular moment, some hot debated moment in Star Wars history here. But I guarantee if it was in a film, if we saw this somewhere else, oh, there'd be 39 videos the next day about how horrible this was.
Yeah.
And I understand the spirit of that. But also, that's the thing, too, is someone sitting around, Filoni, Gilroy, we talked about how in seasons one and two, it was a little bit more the, hey, we're fans getting to do this. Can you believe it? And there were some more references. You were tracking them so well in the early episodes of Clone Wars Report. But it's just fun as a creator sitting there. And I, like you just said, that's my favorite scene. Wouldn't it be fun if, and the answer is more often than not, yes. Yes, it would.
Yeah. And I think the thing that ultimately makes me come down on it with a thumbs up is that it's actually works emotionally. It's a subversion. So if you know those beats, right, from the second that R2 takes the lightsaber, like you're ready to fist pump, right? Because something horribly unjust is going on. Our heroes that we, you know, like and admire are being treated horribly. It just an awful thing needs to be stopped. And it's got that heroic flair. And you're feeling your Return of the Jedi feelings of like, the hero has come and they are going to put a stop to this. And then you get a total just subversion of that where for like a very few beats, it feels like it's going to be Return of the Jedi and our heroes are going to fly away high-fiving because they beat the awful bad guys. And then, nope, they're they're electrocuted and contained.
Yeah.
You know, so quickly. It's a subversion. I feel like it works on an emotional level with great intention to make you think it's going to be Return of the Jedi, and it isn't.
It isn't. Yeah, and I think that's great. I think it all works. And again, fun moment with purpose, like you said there too, which is, at the end of the day, the big, I guess, measuring stick of these moments. And I don't mean to get on this weird tangent of defending it versus any modern day arguments, but it's like, you know, Luke lifts an X-Wing out of the water and we've got, you know, hate essays being published for days. And it's like, it's the same spirit, it's the same Star Wars thing. And it's also done with good purpose, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really great way to look at it is like, what is the purpose and go from there. You mentioned this, and it was really fun to track in the Star Wars galaxy, who would happily show up to an auction to purchase other sentient beings? Well, we have the Mugen, who are an alien and don't feature a lot. They are the ones who were selling, diluted poisoned goods to Mandalore in that arc. We, of course, have a Nemodian. We have a Hutt, Gorga in particular, I believe, and that Moon or Mun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's very excited that the Jedi aren't so tough.
it's very Newt Gunray, kill her or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I might have missed some, but that was really fun to see. Like, yeah, these are the groups of people who come from cultures of ideologies of greed and control and power, right? Yeah,
totally.
And that's the thing too. I like that for a lot of these groups, like we know that the Modians are motivated by greed. The Huts are motivated by control. The Moons or Muns, they run the banking clan, and they have a different perspective of control and manipulation. So yeah. I really like that. Anakin mentions that Shmi was sold in a market just like this before the Huts bought her. How did that land with you?
Actually landed really well. It was a great kind of, you know, I'm not dying to see the tragedy of Shmi being sold, but it, you know, the little bit more of the history and getting a little bit more and just knowing that was known. That's a real story. And that's something that's part of Anakin's life and history and why it would affect him. Cause again, it's all this trauma is not easy to process and not easy to just move past. So it was a great reference, a meaningful reference.
Yeah, I thought that was really powerful. I really enjoyed that. Final thing that I wrote down is Anakin's cover name when he is pretending to be somebody in the trade of giving Ahsoka away or selling Ahsoka. His cover name is Lars Quell.
Yes.
What did you think of him using Lars as a part of his cover name?
I absolutely. You know, we all can't have Jackie Daytona as our cover name in a bar, but I love. I actually had to stop and I was doing some Wikipedia references digging. On was that a name that he took? Because he's mentioning that the one guy he kills, and the queen's like all about it, and you know, it's like I was fascinated by the choice of that.
Yeah, this I really think it's great that he's like Quell. That's a cool sounding name. What else? Lars.
Yeah.
Or it just also like, oh wow, you're really not letting go of your past. That you're pulling names associated with your drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other canon or lore connections that you noticed?
I just clicked off to go to Wikipedia. We mentioned Anakin being shocked again and everything. I don't want to say the word fun. I'll put quotation marks around that. Fun tracking Anakin getting shocked or electrocuted all through the Clone Wars leading up to some of his bigger life events later on.
Yeah, there's a big video to be made of all of the scenes where Anakin gets electrocuted in some way,
yeah.
Comic books included. Was there anything in this arc then that you disliked or questioned?
You mentioned it. It's just one of those things that I think we'd be remiss not to mention it. This is we talk about the ever changing viewing audience and what we kind of want to see and what maybe we don't want to see and just. You have to thread needles sometimes. And this is an arc about slavery, a very real thing, maybe important thing to discuss, all the ramifications of and how we got there and all these big things. And then, there was some uncomfortable master slave humor with Anakin and Ahsoka that I don't know would stand the test of time.
Yeah, it was a little bit of banter that like maybe you could find some different meaning out of it. But yeah, it was a little for me tonally. I think that's the thing sometimes like I am bothered when I'm not sure when I can't read what the tone is intending, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it trying to get at deeper ideas or was it like kind of having the normal like, you know, Anakin and Ahsoka have done this since their first meeting of like counting, you know, who can get there faster, counting how many droids you've taken out. So a little bit of that kind of like fun ego bluster. It was like, but applied to a very different context, didn't feel as fun.
Yeah. I mean, and there's that. And I mean, even there's some of the action, like I didn't mark a lot of action down for the second episode. Cause I just remember at one point I kind of put aside my laptop and I was like, this is dark.
Yep. Yes, exactly. Anything else that you wanted to bring up, disliking or questioning?
No, and that again, I think, again, you got a real sensitive topic, and no matter what era you're writing this in, and I think they really used everything well to tell this important story, many layers to it.
Yeah, but I agree. I had just written down for myself in my own notes. They're difficult episodes because of the topic. I think the topic is handled well, but it is still hard. Yeah. Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
No, not at all. I was jumping to the figures, but no, good stuff. and yeah, I forget what's next coming up for us. You'll let us know. But I was like, whew, I'd love to have a little fun 3PO magic elf episode.
I think we got to wait a little while for the magic elf. We will get to that in just a moment. There's nothing else that I wanted to touch on because there's so many great things in the episode we already talked about. So let's get to figures or toys. If you could have anything inspired by this episode, what might you want?
Well, I had put down this Admiral. I went to look up his name and I couldn't necessarily find it, but Admiral Coburn.
Oh, yes. Yes.
His name. kind of looks like an old, like they designed it after an old actor from the 1940s or something, like a Jim Cagney or something. But
he really does.
Yeah. I just like, he had just a presence about it. It was a really interesting design. I'm sure we may have seen him before. We'll see him again. I don't know. I just, so, you know, if we were in an era still where they were just making all those Clone Wars figures from every little corner of the show, I definitely would want a 3¾.
He was a really up your alley. He's got that like steadfast military guy. Like I'm looking him up on Wikipedia, and he's got that like that frowning mouth and that like look. It's got to be done. And I'm gonna get it done.
What Joseph is saying is I root for Stannis Baratheon too much, and sometimes I connect with those characters. And yeah, he had that look. But that was gonna be my answer, and still is an answer. But you've convinced me, I think, and maybe we talked about this during the Bad Batch episode, but you reminded me of that. I do think I want flying Breezak glider toys.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's not entirely responsible of me, but I have a nice balcony here, a small balcony, but it's nice to have, and I could throw a Breezak off of there and just watch it drift through the neighborhood.
That'd be a great TikTok video. Man throws Star Wars glider off balcony.
Man throws Breezak. Yeah, that's the TikTok video that's going to go huge for somebody someday.
It would be better than man gets hit and crotch by football. It would definitely exceed those numbers.
Now, if his man gets hit and crotch by flying Breezak, that's gold.
Arrgh, my crotch. Yes, old Simpsons references here on Force Center.
Ooh. Yeah, so I would love, I was trying to think, like, I do want a Breezak toy, but you know what I really want? This is larger than a toy, but I want a Breezak ride at Galaxy's Edge. I want them to build a large Breezak that can throw me in the air.
It would be kind of, you could do that. You could do some big fancy one, or like the old style rocket ship or Dumbo ride, just on a carousel that lifts up, and you're just flying on Breezaks or Gundarks or any kind of flying creature in Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't quite fit the aesthetic of Galaxy's Edge, but man, would that be great if it was just like the old school sort of like, yeah, you don't go very high, but you're riding a Viractyl, just jumping, and Breezak, which is gliding. Oh, that'd be great.
I love it.
Last toy for me is I'm so enjoying collecting as many Obi-Wan Kenobi action figures as I can find and afford. I really like the odd ones. I'm not happy about what he had to go through. But if there was a Obi-Wan's really bad day action figure with all of the just the tears and the dirt on his robes, I would buy Obi-Wan's bad day action figure in a heartbeat.
Yeah, any scale, but that might be a Hot Toys Sideshow $400 detailed face bruising. It'd be bad.
I think that one might be worse for me. I'll keep it smaller. I want a 3¾. nice vintage. All right, next up, Ken, is a really fun one. I can't wait to talk about this one. Fun was maybe not the right word. It is not 3PO meets a magic elf. It's one episode, season 4, episode 14, A Friend in Need. There is some heavy stuff, but there's some cool stuff. This is an Ahsoka focused episode. We got some Bo-Katan. This is an episode that I stayed up late after watching Bo-Katan's live-action appearance in Mandalorian and then watched this episode. So I'm really excited to watch it with you because I think it's a great Clone Wars episode, but I think it has extra excitement given a lot of the characters' appearance in The Mandalorian.
Can't wait. And yeah, you know, I like that Bonteri family, and let's do it.
Yeah, a lot of Bonteri action coming up.
I also like that you kind of suggested that you and I go to a cabin and we get some hot chocolate and get some blankets and watch Star Wars together. And I would want to do that. I think we should plan that.
Absolutely. A big cabin of Star Wars sounds great. I'll take my Breezak up there. Yeah. What do you think the moral of this episode of our podcast should be?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, in the darkest of podcasting hours, when clicks and views can be a challenge and everyone wants to kneel to the power of clickbait, you can still find hope in being who you are.
Oh, that is great. Hope versus fear versus angry clickbaits. I love it. Do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I would love to. We're the Force Center Podcast. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. I always say those every week, and they are a little less active than our other spots, but stay tuned. More things coming to those locations. Also, we're on Facebook. Remember Facebook? Get into the metaverse by liking us at the Force Center Podcast over there. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ Force Center. You can get an audio book on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. The podcast is available in a lot of different spots, including the classics like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, Spotify, and more, including iHeartRadio. And don't forget, you can support us directly if you so choose at patreon.com/Force Center. You can follow me at Katnapsok or go to my website, katnapsok.com, where you can link to things like comedy show dates, my music show, Pop Rock and Radio, or more. And for Joseph, you're going to want to go to these spots.
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And for all of my other comedy adventures, you can go to my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Admiral Barton Coburn, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.